Welcome to About Sex, the podcast about love, relations, and, well, sex. My name is Josh, and with me is Angela Skirtu, a marriage and sex therapist in St. Louis.
Hi!
Today we are talking about the taboo surrounding clinical terms in sex, LGBTQ civil rights and marriage, and treating affairs in a clinical setting. So let's get right into it with the taboo. How are you doing, Angela?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Glad to be here.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
So our first topic is the taboo surrounding clinical terms in sex. So let's go over what the clinical terms are.
So vagina
and
penis
yeah.
is one of the clinical terms. Clitoris is a clinical yeah. term. A vulva.
Ooh.
And masturbation, sex. Yeah, or intercourse. Some people would use the word intercourse.
Or maybe relations.
Relations, yes, indeed.
Relations for you, my
lady. You like the relations, don't you?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't like relations? But yeah, it's interesting to me because there are a lot of odd judgments around just basic clinical terms. It seems that people are even a little more comfortable with slang terms than they
right.
are with the clinical ones.
Right, I've noticed that. Like, people will say, like, dick. And they're okay with that, but you say the word penis, and they're like,
Although if you say the C word, then you've gone way too far.
Well, it depends on the situation.
Of course, right? In porn, it's perfectly appropriate.
Well, let's not go too far.
I'm just saying. It's funny. Like, different terms are okay in different settings. Or, like, some people won't even say any sexual terms. They'll, like, allude to it. Like, they'll say hoo-ha, or, like...
Or your downstairs area.
Downstairs. Oh, I had a friend who used to call it the bottom. Like, pretty much the bottom would be, like, she was talking about her vagina, but it was like a front bottom. That's what she was calling it.
Yeah, of course. Everyone has one.
But it was a weird term
it's
to
like,
call
wait,
it.
Am I pooping out of my front bottom or my back bottom?
The side bottom.
Oh, don't make side bottom into this. So, what do you think, why do you think it's important to use the clinical terms? Is it important?
I think it is important. I think quite a few people can be in different situations, kids, teens, where they need to know what their body parts are. And if they can't say anything about it, then it could be a safety situation. Why do you think it's important?
Oh, it's the same thing. I concur.
You concur with my opinion.
Concurrently. That sounds like a good plan. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it's important for, you know, even as they grow older, for them to be able to advocate for themselves, and knowing what your body parts are is one way of being able to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. Well, I actually had an in-law who specifically flipped out when I brought up the word masturbation, and I was just saying it in passing. I didn't even think anything about it. But when I said it, they acted like I had just murdered their children.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that story. Yeah. They really flipped
like
out.
They really flipped out. And it really shouldn't be that way, because really it's just a word. No word should ever make you that offended, unless it is a word that's used in a hateful way. That's it. Unless it's one that somebody's trying to use to hurt you.
I wonder if somebody could use masturbate in a hateful way.
I
masturbate in your general direction.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Well, I agree. I think it's kind of silly. You know, I don't know why people get so freaked out about certain words. I think it's because actually parents sometimes are really freaked out about those words. So then the kids pick up that fear and anxiety about it.
And, you know, the kids know the words. They're not stupid. I remember another time, one of my in-laws. We have a lot of in-laws in St. Louis.
We have a lot of in-laws who don't like sex terms.
So we have a family member that is deaf, so mm-hmm. they use a lot of sign language. And
he's referring to my mother, by
yep.
the way.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
okay.
She never listens. So her mother uses a lot of sign language, and she has there's a community of deaf people, and they tell stories together. And one of the stories they had told was about a person who got pulled over by a police officer, and he walked up to her car, and it was a young woman, and she was totally deaf. She only mm-hmm. knew sign language. He walked up, and he put his fingers together and his thumbs together in the sign that actually means vagina.
But let's be clear. Like, but, he was looking for her
but
license.
But he was actually just pushing his fingers together saying, can I see your license?
Mm-hmm.
But all she saw was him saying, can I see? And then she saw...
She saw the vagina sign, and then she freaked out, and she drove away, actually.
She drove away.
It was a very dangerous
situation.
Because he thought she was running away from him, but she thought he was trying to rape her.
So she got into a lot of trouble for that. I mean, they tried to... She tried to say, oh, well, I thought he was trying... Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know exactly what happened with that part.
The story doesn't end there, because they were telling us the story, and it... And it was like at a holiday. I think it was like Thanksgiving.
It was around my grandmother.
And it was around grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Great-grandma. That's actually great-grandma. Your grandmother. And then all the ladies in your family. Because there's like two guys. That's it. And 17
women.
And
then the nephew.
Yeah. Let me finish.
Okay.
So the nephew, when they were telling the story, they would never use the word vagina or any other word for it.
Mm-hmm.
They would just say the sign for it. And they say... And they would use one of those colloquialisms for it. And they kept doing it, and they kept making the sign. And my nephew, he's hilarious. He said, oh, you mean vagina?
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting right across from grandma.
It was the funniest thing ever.
It was the most amazing. I bursted out laughing.
You burst off laughing, but the women were like, oh,
everyone
my God,
else
Dalton.
In the room thought that Dalton had just murdered somebody again. Like, no matter what, if you say a word that has no attachment to it, it's not. It's a clinical word. It's a vagina.
Well, and
there's
maybe that's the thing, is people need to see it as a clinical word and not as a threat to their life.
It's not a dirty word. There's nothing wrong with vaginas. I think they're wonderful. They have their uses.
They're very... Actually, vaginas are very important pieces.
As well as they're well-maintained and trimmed and... You know, fed regularly, they're going to be happy.
I tell women their vaginas are amazing. I mean, we're capable of multiple orgasms. We're
you
capable.
You guys have a baby factory.
We
in
do.
You.
We have a baby
That's
factory
what's amazing
in our uterus.
To me. You guys have a little bump and grind, and then our job's done. And then you guys take a single cell and you turn it into a person. You eventually have a person as a tenant inside your belly. That's pretty freaking amazing.
You know what's interesting about that? So, like, there are no laws or rules about getting pregnant, but there are laws and rules about who can get married, or there have been for many, many years.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Like, before the 1960s, they had the Civil Rights Movement, and part of that was African Americans, black people in this country wanted the same rights. They wanted the right to vote,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted the right to marry who they wanted, whether that person was white or black. I don't know when that was really established.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly the time frame.
But, you know, they had to fight for all these different rights, and now, today, the LGBTQ community actually
mm-hmm.
has been fighting for the right to marry.
Well, just this last year, they got it.
They actually got it, and
mm-hmm.
it was amazing because the Supreme Court said it is a right. It is a civil right for someone to be able to marry, because why should two straight people be able to marry and two gay people not be able to marry? That's
I think people are still trying to figure out how to, like, come into this too. Like, I was recently at a conference and there was this lesbian couple, and the woman introduced herself, and then she introduced, this is my fiance, like, we just got engaged. And I remember the table was really silent. Like, they didn't know quite how to respond. And my thought
was like, somebody had just dropped.
Yeah. It was like,
something.
Yeah, everybody was just quiet. And so then I went beyond it, and I was kind of like, hey, congratulations on your engagement. And it was just interesting because they're like, well, thank you. And I was like, when's the wedding date? But the point is that, like, it's just the same as if a straight couple gets engaged, you just talk to them
Except
and congratulate
there's
them.
There's probably more glitter.
Maybe not necessarily.
There's
going to
be more glitter.
Only if
and
they're the
that,
kind of couple
that,
that wants glitter.
I've got to say, I've been to, I think, only one gay wedding, and it was probably the most amazing wedding I've been to.
Oh, really?
Because our friend Michael
got
married, and we showed up, and we got into a limo, and that limo drove us into the jungle where there was it was like a palace with all these fans and an open floor plan and open air bar. And they had a cash bar though. So.
Well, yeah, that's true. They did all that money and then they didn't pay for our drinks.
They didn't do an open bar. Like, yeah.
Well,
I'm glad I only got you a $20 gift.
This was when we were like, in college, people. Wait,
there's an open bar. Let's go splurge on the gift, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. No, well, I mean, it's just glad, I'm glad that they're able to marry and that, you know, finally the Supreme Court has figured out, like, it's silly that we're trying to regulate people's rights to marry.
I don't think people realize how big of a deal it is, though. Like,
yeah.
This is a big moment in our country's history because the civil rights movement in the 60s was massive. That was something that really set the tone for our country for the next 60 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going through another big change like that right now. Right now, there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of turnover, and people are pushing for change. And not only politically, but... Yeah, okay, that's the word, politically.
You know,
not
let's
just
talk,
politically.
Let's talk about rights. I mean, part of the reason why I do the job that I do is because just in the 60s, there was the sexual revolution. Mm-hmm. And before that sexual revolution, women didn't even, it didn't matter if we had orgasms during sex. It didn't matter if we even wanted to have sex. There were states that had rules that basically said, you have to have sex with your husband or we'll hang you. If you ever,
what?
Like, no, that existed.
That can't be a real thing.
That was real. Actually, they made a mention of it in that movie, Gone with the Wind. Like, there was this point.
They hung a woman.
No, what, this is what he said. His wife said, I'm not going to have sex with you anymore. And he says to her, I could have you hung for something like that. But because he loved her, he wasn't going to.
That was so nice of him.
I know. The point is, we've only had rights as women to enjoy sex. Pretty much since the 60s. Before that, it didn't matter as much.
Hold on. Before the 1920s, which is all of history except for about 80, 90 years,
mm-hmm.
women had zero rights.
I know.
Like, women had never had the right to own property. They mm-hmm. didn't have a right to anything.
Which always makes me, like, kind of confused because when women say, oh, I wish for the good old days of the old times, I'm like, I don't know if it was that good of a time for you.
Oh, back in the day where I could be stoned for being a witch. Oh, those were the days.
Back in the day where I only got married for procreation or social status.
Or my husband could legally rape me.
Legally.
And if I complained, they would stone me.
Was terrible.
That's like 2,000 years ago, or about 100.
Exactly. So it was actually kind of a dangerous thing, and so that's part of why I love what I do is that.
What do you do?
Well, I'm a sex therapist. Oh, thanks, babe. I'm a sex therapist, and my biggest part of my job is to teach women how to be sexual people and to be happy with who they are. That they deserve to enjoy sex, and that there are women who fought for that right. Not just the right to enjoy sex, but for rights in general.
Some people still not enjoy sex?
Oh, yeah. There are.
Well, why even do it then?
Oh, women have, throughout our lives, women have kind of been systematically been shamed for our sexuality. And so it's hard for quite a few women to even feel comfortable masturbating or enjoying sex. And there's this old mentality
But masturbating makes me feel really comfortable.
Well, you're a guy. It's been okay for you to masturbate.
Oh, no. Everybody told me that I was going to go blind and go to hell if I touched my dick.
Well, then what made it okay for you?
It felt good. That's it.
But did you have guys or friends who made it okay or even said something? Or did you just kind of do it and it was like, meh?
Just kind of did it. Yeah.
I wonder if it's different for guys because you have outies.
Yeah, all you have to do is pull on it. It's like, done. Can you grab a doorknob? Then you can masturbate.
That's so different for women. And we're more complicated,
too. Oh, yeah,
too.
For women, it's like, can you program a computer? Then you can maybe masturbate. I have no freaking clue.
If you program it correctly and touch it just right one time randomly.
But you push it a little too hard and you're like, now get out.
It's true. It goes numb if you touch it too hard.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part about a clitoris. So, like, it has all those nerve endings. But then if you like, mess with it too much, it can actually go numb. And so you have to, like, find ways to, like, get there, but then do other things, then go back. It's a pretty complex system.
Yeah, it sounds like too much work for me.
Well, one thing we... this for some women, it is too much work. And for women who've never actually learned to masturbate and, like, take care of themselves, then they don't know how to teach their husbands to give them an orgasm, and then they never get orgasms.
Yeah. So now we're done talking about gay people. I have no idea how we got here.
How we got there.
But
what are we going to move to next?
Now I would like to know This is kind of something I really want to know is how do you deal with affairs in a clinical setting? Like you have a lot of couples, you've told me, who come into your practice.
Half of my practice is affairs.
Oh,
it's exhausting.
I gotta say, I would hate your job.
No, you tell me that all the time.
Because you deal with people who are in that point in their marriage or their life where they're at their worst, where they are angry and sad and they're struggling so much.
True.
And I don't want to be around those people.
You know, it's funny too, because I love what I do. I love helping people through their crises.
Yeah.
I see it as kind of like little puzzles.
That. You are very much a loving, caring person.
Oh, I love people and I want them to feel valued and helped.
But not chihuahuas. You don't love chihuahuas.
No, I don't love our chihuahuas right now because they keep barking and waking up our baby.
Oh, but they're being so good right now.
I do love them. But anyhow, so what I do, so this
How
is
do you treat affairs?
So, it's best when they come right away, like right after the affair happens, within a week or two weeks.
Still wet.
Yeah, like, oh my God. No, the reason is because the biggest issue is right after the affair happens, couples get into a type of revenge situation where they are
tit for tat.
I know, like they get very angry.
Eye for an eye.
And there's a lot of bad things that can happen. They get into this crazy talk where they're basically in circles where the person who's been cheated on asks questions in like very directed, almost like accusatory ways constantly, which makes sense because the person just cheated.
Clearly.
But then the person who's cheated feels really shameful about it. And so they will avoid the questions and they will like turn it back on them. And they end up having these huge dysregulated fights.
Because a lot of times the person who has cheated, they will point to all the different problems they already had in their relationship
as an excuse
for why they have done what they've done.
Which makes the other person feel blamed for something they didn't do. And that's the hardest thing, is the person who cheats is responsible for the choice they made.
Right.
And they both have to work as a team to fix it.
And
that's the worst part.
Guess what?
The hardest part.
Probably a little easier to go into therapy before you've cheated.
Oh, I would
so
love it if that happened.
If your marriage feels like it's falling apart and you feel like you need to cheat, give Angela a call at St. Louis Marriage Therapy.
Yeah, you can look me up, a therapist in St. Louis. Thanks for the plug, babe.
Boom, boom, boom.
Right back at you. But the truth is, going back to your question.
So you want them to come in early.
I want them to come in early. A big part of the first 3 months is me avoiding big, serious problems. Like, I have this whole situation I teach them. I say, don't do, what are some of the things
don't
I tell them?
Don't join the circus.
Don't do a revenge affair, because that just makes it worse. Be careful about contacting the other person.
No autoerotic asphyxiation?
No, no, Josh, no autoerotic asphyxiation.
Damn it. I can't do anything.
But yeah, I just give them like a big rundown of these are the things to avoid while you are emotionally dysregulated. The biggest thing is don't make any decisions. Any big decisions. People want to like burn everything. They want to move. They want to go on a big trip. And the truth is, you shouldn't make any decisions when you're that emotionally in trouble.
Whenever we're in crisis mode, our instinct is to change something.
Yeah, fix it. Fix it
fix
quick.
Fix it. And they want to change things that are big and drastic and easy to change. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to move, or I'm going to quit my job, or I'm going to hire a maid.
And the
that's
hardest
a bad
thing,
example,
well, but. The hardest thing though is that when you do that, you don't know if that's solving the right problem. And there's so many problems to solve.
If your home was very dirty, hiring a maid was a good solution.
Not if you had sex with her like Arnold Schwarzenegger did.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, so anyhow, we are towards the end of the show, so we wanted to thank you for joining us.
Right. And next week, we're going to try to talk about fetish. What is a fetish, Angela?
Ew.
Just a little sneak peek. What is it?
A fetish is, well, it's anything that you kind of need to actually get off. That's actually the true definition of a fetish, and it's different from kink. So we're going to cover it a little bit more in detail next time.
So join us next week at the About Sex podcast. Podcast about love, relations, and sex.
Of course.
This is Josh.
And this is Angela Skirtu. Thanks.
Have a good night.